You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for April 8th, 2009, episode 66, The 5 D's and W's. It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and how that intersects, impacts, and otherwise may be of some use to our ministries. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again for episode number 66 on April 8th. Joining me as usual from beautiful, I don't know if it's beautiful today or not, we'll find out, from Sally Draper, beautiful sleepy eye Minnesota. Morning, Sally.
Not beautiful Sally Draper, don't want to confuse that.
Well, that's true, too.
No.
Sally Draper and beautiful sleepy eye.
Well, good morning, Martin, and welcome to Holy Week.
I hope
this is to be a good week for you. We are in the midst of some busy times, but a wonderful opportunity, highlight of the year in our Christian church year, and great opportunity to worship our risen Savior this Sunday.
Absolutely.
Really looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Kind of reminiscent, when I was in the ministry a number of years ago, I could always tell when Holy Week was because I would lose my voice. And that's happened again, even though I'm not standing in the pulpit these days. So, listeners, please excuse the raspiness. We'll let you listen to the beautiful tone, the southern tones of more southern tones of Sally Draper this week than mine.
I just read a Twitter feed from Pastor Paul Jansen, and he said, you know, it's holy, and he had parentheses, exhaustion week, with how busy it is, but it doesn't compare to what Jesus went through for us this week, you know.
So. Absolutely. Great comparison.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to talk about that Savior in the context of what we can share on the internet. It is... We talked about this last year, Internet Evangelism Day. I don't know when the exact day is. Aren't you supposed to pick a day sometime here in April? Is that the way that works, Sally?
Yeah, I think they actually targeted April 26th.
Oh, there you go.
Sunday.
Okay.
And I think, you know, the idea isn't, you know, that you have to do something on that day, but more just to raise awareness.
Call attention to it.
Day.
Right.
And they have a website, InternetEvangelismDay.com, where they've just done their best to prepare a lot of resources and idea starters and links to great church websites and things like that, you know, so that people can begin to focus on digital evangelism, reaching out with the word through the internet.
And in our pre-podcast conversation, we made the comment that basically on this show, it's Internet Evangelism Day every week, right?
That's right. That's what we're trying to accomplish here, at least.
That's right. But today it's a little bit more formal, and we thought we would focus on two sets of five concepts. Maybe a month ago, we had talked about the five don'ts of an evangelistic website, and that was part of an Evangelism Toolbox DVD that I had created in a workshop that I'm going to be teaching over the next year or so through the Commission on Evangelism. We're going to focus on, this time, the more positive side, the five do's. What must you do if you are thinking about putting together an evangelism website? And Sally, you have five things of your own, but yours are five W's.
That's right, Martin. I had the privilege of presenting at a recent Minnesota District Adult Discipleship Workshop. Did a couple of sessions with people looking at the five W's for your church or school website. So the who, what, why, where, and when topics for your church and school website. And I think they go together well with what your five do's say. Mm-hmm. And we cross a little bit, but we also have different perspectives to share.
So right.
That's
yeah.
a good thing.
I was kind of amazed that they weren't the same, which is good because there are a lot of thoughts and ideas about how to do this thing called internet evangelism. And it'll tie in nicely with our interview a little bit later. We had a chance to speak with Dr. John Lorenz from Asia Lutheran Seminary in Hong Kong. And they're using some internet tools for evangelism there and also for distance learning. So stay tuned for our conversation with Dr. J. Let's get right into it. I'll let ladies go first. What's your first W, Sally?
Well, I think a good place to start is just evaluating exactly why you want to have a church or school website. You know, who is it that you're trying to reach, and you know, what your objectives are for the site. And we've talked about this on the show before, Martin, but basically the trend now for people looking for a church or school is to shop online first. So, you know, you may not ever get the chance to greet that person walking through your door if you don't have a good web presence to greet them first. You
that's
know,
right.
That's making a huge impression. So I think that's a really good starting point, just kind of evaluating who your audience are, what their demographic is. You know, obviously there's ways that your church or school website can serve your members and school parents as well. You know, so just putting on the hat of all those different users, why you might want to use a website.
And that tied into one of our don'ts that we talked about a few weeks ago is don't try and be all things to all people. So when you water down your website so that every possible audience would be comfortable there or get something out of your site, I think you have to be a little bit more strategic than that. And don't try and mix internal. I think the actual don't was don't try and mix internal and external communications. And that brought some good comments from our listeners as well. So I think that's a great first why. Why in the world do you want a website and what's it there for? And I ask that question over and over, and then I think you have to figure out whether you're succeeding at that as well.
Exactly. So, hopefully that's going to guide all your efforts as you go forward.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go over to the do list. One of the five do's of an evangelist website is do dedicate enough staff. I think that is a common mistake when somebody has, a church has in mind to do this great thing called a website. And then they pour that responsibility on the poor pastor or an individual who's already doing 10 other things in the church. Realize that this is a communications tool and is visible to the world and especially to your church visitors, and it ought to look like people are paying attention to it.
Yeah, I have kind of an overlap. This is probably the one place we did overlap. My second W was to look at who should create and maintain the site. So same concept there. And and one of the resources I pointed folks to was a really good blog post someone I know wrote recently. It was something you wrote back in February, and it was called Forming Your Communication Technology Committee.
Right.
And, you know, really looking at who should be a part of this, because this is communication for your congregation, that's a pretty high priority, I would think, and you want to have a good mix of people involved in those communication efforts.
Absolutely. When I'm thinking about this, three categories of people come to mind when you're thinking about a website. One would be your content providers. Those are the people who have the content that they want to share. So that's your youth group leader, your pastor, your teacher, your congregation chairman, whoever that is. Second group would be the content managers. Those people are the people making sure that the website content is fresh. You can't always count on your content providers to do that. Maybe they don't even have the tools necessary to do that, but this content managers have that responsibility of the site or portions of the site.
Are they geeks? Is that pretty much how you define them?
The content managers?
Yeah,
I think they could be. I don't think they necessarily need to be with some of the cool tools and easy tools that are available. Even, you know, with tools like Final Web, those make it real easy, so you don't have to be really geeky. You don't have to be the Procket. Maybe you don't have to be wearing the Procket protector to do that, but you do have to have some technical expertise. The really geeky person is the website master or website manager. They're basically responsible for everything on the site, its functionality, the support of the users, down to the RSS feeds, all those kinds of things. They're the person that has the bird's eye view and really is concerned about the health of the site in general. And I think those people would be responsible for communicating with everybody else, how the site's doing, who's visiting, what kind of logging you're getting, you know, what kind of traffic you're getting, those kinds of things.
All right. I like it when we have geeks on our committee. That's the fun part.
Yeah, but they shouldn't be all, and that article that you mentioned cautions everybody that your committee shouldn't be full of geeks because you really need to balance.
Right. It's good to have the perspective of all different types of users, because geeks tend to look over, you know, things that really would be a hang up for the normal user of the website.
Yeah, absolutely. I think primarily you need communicators, people who are in tune with the communication that you're trying to put together and who the potential listeners or viewers are in the case of a website. Do number two on my list, Sally, is focus. Do focus on quality. And that's kind of tied to do number one, where you need enough people, enough staff to do this. But use good stuff. Use good photography, even maybe using stock photography. Make sure that the words are obviously put together in a meaningful way with good grammar, that they communicate effectively. Don't use cheesy clip art. You know, sometimes we see that on church bulletins even and in church newsletters. Of course, no typos, but obviously pay attention to detail. People are judging you, as you mentioned. They're coming to your website maybe to wonder if they're wondering to asking the question, you know, should I visit? And if they see that not a lot of care and attention has not been dedicated to the site, they're going to say, well, maybe the church is run that way too.
That's right. I think we've talked about before driving up to a church and seeing the impeccable landscaping and the cleanliness of the church and all that. That makes an impression on your church visitors, and the same is true of your website. You know, if you put the effort into it, then people are going to have a favorable opinion of your church. And that really ties to my third W, which is what should be on the site.
Right.
And again, you have a blog post about the shiny church websites, and I think one of the things you did there was point to a stock photo website. So these photos and good imagery are available out on the web. You may pay a dollar or two for an image, but it may be worth it to invest that in the quality of your website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is hard work, and I think congregations need to go and schools need to go in this with eyes wide open. Don't just have a website to have a website. You know, have it do something and obviously intentionalize what you're doing, and that message and that quality needs to be built in. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Probably a good point, just one more point there to mention, InternetEvangelismDay.com, that website we led off with, because they have lots of great tips along those lines as well. So a good place to get ideas for sprucing up your website.
Yep, absolutely. Do number three for me is make sure you can be found. And this is that little acronym we've thrown out a few times in the past, Sally, SEO, search engine optimization. You can have the greatest website in the world, just like you can have the greatest church in the world, but if nobody knows about it, nobody's going to visit. And search engine optimization is this mysterious thing to some, wondering how can I get people to come to the website. And there are just some very simple things to do when you're thinking about trying to drive traffic to any website. One good way to kind of rate how web or search engine friendly your website is to just do a simple Google test. Type in the city that your church is located in, the state, and the word Lutheran. So, for instance, my church would be Hartford, Wisconsin, Lutheran. And then see what results you get from, let's say, Google. And hopefully all of your churches, when you do that little exercise, will come up on the first page. And even better, they would come up as the first entry. Now, this may be a little bit harder to do if you're in a city like Milwaukee or some of these other good Lutheran towns. But I think that would tell you a lot about how optimized your website is.
And I think there's some other tools we could mention in this category as well. We had an interview recently with John Simonson,
right,
who runs his own web development company, WebStream Dynamics. And I'll make sure and include a link in our show notes to that episode, because John gave out just loads of great ideas for search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm.
And our friends at Google provide a lot of good ideas as well, Martin. That's something that you included in your presentation.
There is a whole article and a PDF or a website on how to optimize your website so that Google ranks it higher in their relevance engine. And they're very upfront about how they do that, and they give you some good tips. So we'll include a link to that as well. Sally, what's your, I guess we're up to your fourth W.
Right. In my line of thinking, you know, we figured out who's going to do the work and what we're going to put there. The next thing is, where do we put this great content that we're developing? So how do you host a website? And there's a lot of directions you can go there. I'll include links in the show notes, but you certainly could check out the Final Web Solution. Martin, you mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. That's what Wells has partnered with this internet hosting provider for a content management system, basically, that's very simple to use and creates a very professional-looking website. We have over 400 congregations using the tools now, and we're just seeing some really great results from Final Web. And so that's one option. And the other is we did dedicate a podcast a while back to other content management solutions like Drupal and Joomla. So if you're looking to do your own hosting and setup of your website, then you may want to look into some of those web-based content management solutions that you can install on your own website. So we'll make sure and include links to that in the show notes.
Yep, very important decision. You really only want to make that once. You don't want to be changing your content management system or your address very often.
That's right. You're going to invest a lot there.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. Training and time, sure. Mm-hmm. My fourth do is do focus on events, not institutions. I've brought this up many, many times on the show and in every workshop that I give on website creation and evangelistic websites is I think too many of our sites are very static, and the reason they're static is they focus on the institution. A picture of the church, not that that's bad. Picture the church, service times, names of pastors, blah, 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 and stuff that never changes. So you give the website visitor the impression that, boy, it's the same old thing day after day, Sunday after Sunday. And while the Word of God does not change, what you focus on and some of the programs that you have around that do change, and that's of interest. And that's just kind of marketing 101. So you want to focus on the events that are going on. So your website should change every week because you've got a new sermon theme every Sunday. You potentially have a new Bible class. You have Vacation Bible School starting up. You have Friendship Sunday. The list goes on and on. So I think, again, this goes back to this takes a lot of work, and in order for your website to change every week, that takes people to focus on that. But people will wonder, well, how can I change my website every week? You've got different stuff going on every week, so I think that's something to focus on.
Yep. And that's a great lead into my last W, which is when do we need to update the website? Okay, we've got a website.
It's almost like we built these together, but we really didn't, did we?
No, we didn't, and we didn't practice this either.
That's
so it's
right.
Working out good, Martin.
All right. We got segues all over the place here.
We've got a website. You know, can we check it off our list? Are we done? No, absolutely not. You want to make sure your content is always fresh. And one great way to do that is by using RSS feeds, really simple syndication, where you automate your website to go out and pull new content as it's posted on other websites. And our Wells.net website is just brimming with great content that you can include in your church or school website. Daily devotions, prayers, Bible readings, podcasts, you know, the list is really impressive and extensive. So make use of RSS. We have a page dedicated to it on the Wells.net website, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes.
Very good. And my final do is do get help. Don't be afraid to ask. Sally and I are available to you. And many of you have taken advantage of that, which is great. I get a lot of emails and phone calls on this very topic saying, hey, take a look at my website. What's going on? What could you suggest as an improvement? Or who would be a good hosting provider? Or how do we do RSS? All those questions are valid questions. And there's great resources both on the internet and on the Wells.net site. Wells.net/jump/technology is our technology homepage where you can find some information on that. all kinds of stuff out there. So I would say take advantage and put out a message to the listserv. And one good developing resource that I'm excited to see grow, Sally, is our new, it's not new anymore, I guess, but our wiki page. That's got some good help resources.
You know, some places call things beta for years, so we could still say the wiki's in beta. It's right. Developing. But yeah, excited to see the growth in the wiki. And just recently, Martin, you and I worked together to add a whole new section to the wiki dedicated to online worship. I think that ties in well to our conversation about reaching out with the word, because many Wells congregations are streaming video, or they're posting MP3s of their sermons, or even video archives of their sermons, that kind of thing. So for those that can't be in worship, they can join in either to a live worship or something archived on the web. And it's not just tied to your location. You can go global with this. So check out our online worship area, and we'd love to have you guys edit the wiki and add your congregation. If you're doing any kind of streaming services, archiving audio or video, we have a page dedicated to those that are doing closed caption video, and also one for congregations that are in the iTunes database. Mm-hmm. So if you're part of that, then please, please add yours to our list.
Yeah, so if you're doing any of those things, go, you know, run, do not walk. To actually, we've created a new web address for that. The old one will still work, which was wellstech.wetpaint.com. We've customized that URL, which was a great free service that Wet Paint offered. So you can also now go to wellstechwiki.wells.net. That's wellstechwiki.wells.net. And if you're doing any of these kinds of audio or video things, make sure you're on this list, as we'd like to keep this up to date. And I do get questions quite regularly from those across the Senate about, oh, hey, who's doing this stuff? Who's doing online audio? Who's doing online video? Who's doing closed captioning? Those kinds. Who's doing live streaming? So make sure you're on the list. If you're not there, let us know or add it. You can do that. You're your very own self.
And you guys at Peace Hartford on the list, Martin?
We're not on the list because we don't do any of those things.
Uh-oh.
We just, and I have my head bowed low here.
We just
put in video equipment. So we're just now pushing that or recording to DVD. We don't do any live stuff yet. But so I think this summer we'll be probably putting some stuff online, and that might fall to me, but hopefully I can clear some time and get my arms around that and get that going this summer. Because if it's just me, that's going to be a problem. So we've got to put together a committee and make sure that we've got a continuous stream. So they put a nice system in. Great sound system, good video cameras, remote controlled. So there's no reason that we can't do that. We just have to. And we're using Final Web, so it's real easy to upload that with an RSS feed and the whole bit. So
very good. Coming soon. I think you're probably
Thanks for calling us out on that, Sally.
Yeah, sorry. I was just going to say, I think you're in the same position as a lot of Wells congregations. I think we're all kind of right on the edge of starting to take advantage of a lot of this technology. I know our friend Alan Bunt, who's at a congregation in Wisconsin Rapids, I can't recall the name of the congregation, but he's one of my Twitter followers, and he was just tweeting this weekend that they were going live this weekend.
So, cool.
This weekend in Wisconsin Rapids. So it's growing, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. And that's why this page is really important. We want to keep it up to date and stay on top of the people that are doing it, so we know where these things are going on.
Yep. Wells Tech. wiki.wells.net. It's time for our interview just this morning, and actually it was in the evening for Dr. John Lorenz. He shared some time with us and talked about what they're doing at Asia Lutheran Seminary in the area of distance learning. Let's listen to our conversation with John. We're very pleased to have joining with us today Dr. John Lorenz, straight from Hong Kong. Welcome, John. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good to be with you.
John, I never quite know what to call you. You're a doctor. You are a pastor. You are a professor. You're a president, all rolled into one. Is that right?
Well, if you're German, it would be Reverend Dr. Professor.
Ah, okay. We'll make it easy then. Okay. John, you are president of Asia Lutheran Seminary. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Hong Kong and what the ministry is like there?
Sure. Wells has been in Hong Kong since the 1960s, and Hong Kong and, of course, the East Asia world has changed considerably in that time. All you have to do is read the newspapers. China itself is fast becoming the second greatest economy in the world, still, however, plagued with a lot of backcountry poverty. Hong Kong is a very interesting place. It belongs to the People's Republic, but it has its own set of laws and will for another 40 years. We can have a seminary openly here. Having a seminary in the mainland would be ideal, but not possible today. There is a church in China approved by the government, but highly regulated by the government. And all Protestants have to go to that church, whether they agree with each other or not. Mm-hmm. So we have a seminary here, and we have a daughter church that's existed for 30 years. It's called the South Asia Lutheran Evangelical Mission. It has 8 congregations, and we're very active also in supporting them. We preach in their congregations. We help them with their Bible Institute. The seminary itself is a byproduct of an initiative of the World Board in 2003. And one part of that was to bring theological education to the Chinese-speaking world. And we have been open now since May of 2005. So we've had 8 semesters. We're into our 8th semester.
So do you have any graduates then yet?
We've had one Bachelor of Theology. I am working with the Master of Divinity graduate. We have 2 near graduation in Taiwan. And we have anywhere from 50 to 70 people attending classes at any one time. A lot of that is, however, what I would call, Chinese people are extremely attuned to continuing education, and people will work a whole day and still come in for a 2.5-3 hour class in the evening.
Wow.
Probably only once a week.
Right.
So we build around those verities. We are now in the midst, after 4 years of reevaluation, and we are seeing some new directions. I can share with you, I know one of the things you're interested in is distance learning.
Mm-hmm.
We have a classroom that is outfitted with distance learning capability, cameras, PowerPoints, large screens. We have had classes exported to Japan and as far away as Sweden, but it isn't the center of our program. That may change as we actively recruit the most talented students in the mainland. We're probably going to do it in a combination, as many programs do in the States, of intensive week-long or 2-week-long retreat-type activities, either here in Hong Kong or in the mainland, probably more so in the mainland, after which we will maintain the program through a Skype or VC. Strangely enough, there doesn't seem to be the jamming or control on those things.
So
at least not
government yet. Is not filtering that. Okay.
So we do it. I had a class for 13 weeks on Old Testament theology, which had students both in the United States and in mainland China.
So the model you're thinking of is more of a jump start, intensive training, kind of get the face to face going to understand how to read each other, because I assume the technology, that's one of the things that there's probably a weakness there where it's helpful to really know the person first before you start doing it over the internet.
That's very important in Chinese culture. You have to have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the Lord has been very kind to me. I'm going to share this too. as I filter through all of the experiences of 4 years, I have become more and more convinced that what we have to offer as a synod, our heritage, it is the grounding in the Word of God based upon a real actual knowledge of the biblical Hebrew and Greek. Now, that seems very ambitious, but I will tell you that in the last 2 years, I have experimented with what I call high-intensity two-week courses. I have students that after 6 months are reading biblical text. And I can do it. I know I can do it. And so we probably are going up to Beijing in August and have such a two-week seminar, and then we will follow it up with weekly checkups on their homework, you might say, and then probably go in mid-October and again in December. That's our model. That's what we're working on. I'm going to take also our Greek professor. We have a young Polish scholar of 28 years old, 27, 28. He has mastered, I think, 7 or 8 languages. And he's fully theologically trained. He's a doctor. And he's teaching Greek right now at ALS. And he's going to observe me teaching Chinese from the ground up. So if we can have this foundation in the biblical languages, parallel to that, the Pastor's Studies Institute-type course material that Al Sorum at Mequon has been working with, that up in the Twin Cities has been used very successfully for Hmong ministry.
Right, right.
We kind of know that we sort of started at the top, and that was a mistake. Not a mistake, but we really can't. You can't get a full-blown seminary with all the bells and whistles if you don't have anything underneath.
Right.
And now with the Synod's financial stewardship being very high priority, we are really actively looking at a more bang for the buck type of approach. We don't think we've wasted time. We've learned a lot. But I think for those who are interested, audio conferencing, video conferencing, sharing materials via the internet is going to become a bigger and bigger part of our operation.
Dr. Lorenz, you mentioned Skype and VC. I'm wondering, a couple of angles to that. Are there other web-based tools you're using? Since are you using anything like Moodle? And also wondering how well-equipped the technology infrastructure is for your students. Do they have high-speed connections, able to tap into these resources easily?
That's an excellent question, Sally. Beijing, yes, and Shanghai, yes, and maybe Wuhan, and Hangzhou, and Guangzhou. We are targeting the cities, and we're targeting student population. In mainland China, you're not allowed to even talk religion with somebody under 18 years old. And yet when they're 18 and they're at the university and they're away from home, there's a tremendous interest in Christianity. And unlike America, where you almost have to apologize for being a Christian at a big university, China is just the other way around. And that's amazing. People won't believe it, but it's true. So we're going to go to places where there is broadband connection and broadband availability. 10, 15 years down the road, I don't know. Time will tell.
So are there other limitations that you're seeing with distance learning in general? You've been in it for, you know, almost since the beginning, I suppose. And
yeah,
are there some things you just can't do?
Well, I think you learn. I learn also now almost all my lecturing is 3 hours long. I never did that before. When every time you change a modality, you adapt. And hopefully, I think I read long ago when I was working on distance learning at Michigan Lutheran Seminary, if you're a good teacher, you can teach in any matrix. If you're a bad teacher, technology ain't going to fix it.
Right.
So I think I found that people tell me I'm a pretty successful teacher. I'm certainly having success with my Hebrew classes here. And these kids, I walk into the classroom and they're eager to learn. And that is something precious. So we found that out. Technology is also a, things, you can get your connection broken.
Mm-hmm.
These are the downsides, yes. You can't actually walk around and look people eye to eye.
Right.
Sally mentioned Moodle. Yes, we're going to look at that too, yes. We haven't used it yet. But
so I suppose one of the complicating factors for distance learning in a setting like ALS is that sometimes you need a translator, so you're adding a third wheel to the whole dynamic there. How does that complicate things, or does it?
Well, at ALS right now, all of our classes are done with a sequential translation into Cantonese or Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that mean, sequential translation?
Professor speaks, mm-hmm. stops, interpreter relates the same material.
Okay.
Back and forth, ping pong.
Right.
You can have the kind where you put earphones on and the translator is in the background and he speaks directly to the student who doesn't understand English. But we haven't been using that.
Okay.
That's simultaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that we're getting to the point, you have to make choices. There are 1.3 billion Chinese. We are not going to reach all. I mean, that's
right.
Tautology, but we are going to find those who have English capability in these early years of reaching up to the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
We also know, and Rob and I talked about it just today, Rob Cirilla, he's my cohort over here, we do not want to have an English-dependent seminary program. Our goal is to have people speak Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
We are very keen, therefore, in what's called the Graduate Mission Assistance Program out of Mequon.
Right.
We have John Baer in Hangzhou this year. We're calling for another GMA this spring. And our hope is that within 5 years, our faculty is going to have Mandarin-speaking professors.
Mm. Okay.
Now, I understand you've been working on a new initiative. Maybe this is a good tie-in, a language working group. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how maybe technology is assisting with those efforts?
Oh, sure, Sally. That's a big part of our program. And I've said to the mission board, even if all else fails, good material translated into Chinese will stand there forever. We have seminaries using translation that Wells did 15 years ago. So we have a very active group here. It's being sponsored and encouraged by the Wells Multi-Language Publications Group out of El Paso. And Paul Hartman is relocating here on July 1st and will stay with us for 2 years. He's not going to be on our staff, but he's going to put his office over here and work with our translation group. We have three levels. We work on evangelism, basic low-level evangelism materials. Then we work on middle for believers that have been gathered, things like the People's Bible Commentary Series. And we are working on Lyle Lang's God So Loved the World Dogmatics textbook for seminary level. We also audio-video archive every lecture at ALS. And so we can use this for students who are ill, miss a three-hour class. That's a big hole, but they get a CD within 24 hours, and they can catch up on the lecture before the next week comes along. So we've pioneered in that area, and we've really been successful. All of these various technologies are being experimented with to get the right mix.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we also are planning now that if we raise up theology students from the grassroots, give them biblical language training on a functional level, using, by the way, also, I'm a firm believer that we can't teach Greek and Hebrew the way I was taught. We're in a different world. We have Bible works, we have Libronics, we have these tools which we've got to equip people how to use them wisely. You have a foundational course, you get them enthusiastic, you get them to use the language, and then you train them how to use the technology so that they don't have to buy a library. They can work with the text directly on a computer screen.
So the Libronic stuff and Bible Works, those kinds of things, are those available in Mandarin, for instance, or is that part of the work that you're doing?
Well, the Mandarin translations are in there. Again, we're going to use English is the second language of China, and we're certainly going to use it to get our substance program started. I can't speak Mandarin. I've been taking Chinese classes so that I understand the language. I'm grateful for that, but I know language theory. I'm past the time when I'll ever be a functional Chinese speaker. But that doesn't mean that I can't do anything.
Right.
So I want to say this last thing. We're going to dovetail the People's Bible commentaries. So we're going to get the key ones that we'll use in our courses, Romans, Galatians, Isaiah, Psalms, Genesis, etc., so that they will be available to the Chinese when we have these courses.
Mm-hmm. So, John, would you say because of the limitations that are inherent to distance learning and the language challenges that you have, is the level of the graduate at the seminary there a lower level? I mean, can only go so far with their theological training as opposed to, let's say, somebody graduating from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary here in Mequon? Or what is your goal there?
Well, okay, you put the classical apples and oranges comparison.
Well, I had to throw it out there.
Yeah, well, that's fine. And of course, I taught at Mequon, and we had a peer here. There's no question that there are strengths that our very slowly developing program inculcate in young men that cannot be duplicated here.
Right.
What you do find here, however, is a spiritual focus and a dedication to learning, which I wish I could export to the United States.
That's neat. That's wonderful.
So we have trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
Are these intelligent people? Absolutely.
Oh, I bet, right. Dedicated.
And time on task and diligence can offset an awful lot of the downside.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be the same, and that's why no one should ever quite compare the two programs. They can try to. It's okay. But it's unfair. It just can't be done.
Right.
I told you, I taught Hebrew at Martin Luther College. I have students, as I said, reading biblical text after 3.5 months. How do you do that?
Right.
Well, my motivation.
Holy Spirit's there somewhere, right?
Oh, sure, that too.
Yeah.
But you know, Mequon does things that are China doesn't have a focus on doctrine the way we do.
Mm-hmm.
Part of its culture, harmony is a real high cultural component here. So you don't want to make anyone lose face.
Right.
And
delicate balance,
so the whole
there, sure.
Idea of critique is hard to come by.
Right.
So you do have differences, and these are challenges for us. We're not asking people to be loving critics, yes, but probably a little bit more evaluative, cultivating that gift of the Spirit, which is called discerning spirits.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Pentecostal stuff in the air. There's a lot of decision theology stuff in the air. Congregational life here is built around the church, maybe like it was in the early church, which is refreshing, and yet there's no infrastructure from the family that supports membership. In fact, often the family is violently opposed to people being Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
when I, it's really heartwarming from my vantage point, whenever I hear of our international seminaries and some of the what I would call success stories of of these dedicated people bucking, you know, their culture in some regards, giving up so much more than, let's say, we would have to here to go into a course of study like this, and seeing all of the missionaries really, you know, what's heartwarming for me is seeing them gravitate towards all the tools, you know, whatever tool is at their disposal, whether that be technology or otherwise, for the sake of the gospel. So, and I definitely see that every time I talk to you or Rob there at Asia Lutheran Seminary, and that's just that's a neat thing to see God work halfway around the world and using whatever means are necessary. We certainly would keep praying for you, John, and your work there. You have significant challenges, but the work is so gratifying. It's got to be.
Well, I'm blessed. The Lord has given me a very interesting life. Sally knows I knew her husband, and we've crossed paths numerous times. And if I ever thought that I would be in the People's Republic of China someday, not in my wildest dreams.
That's right.
But here I am.
Wonderful. Keep up the good work and continued blessings, John. Thank you again for taking the time to join us and share your thoughts.
God bless.
Blessings.
Have a wonderful celebration of Christ's death and resurrection. This is the high point of the year.
We absolutely will. Thanks. As I said in the interview, Sally, it's kind of heartwarming to listen to some of the stories and some of the efforts that are going on outside of our borders, in not just in how they use technology, but boy, they're really impacting some lives and bringing in people that we may have never touched if we hadn't gone out into the highways and the byways and shared God's word.
Yeah, I was really excited to hear him talk about how eager the Chinese are for the Word of God, mm-hmm. and how diligently they study and how excited they are about it. I guess that sprinkling of the gospel is definitely shifting to another continent, you know, with all those billions of people there. It's really exciting to see.
Huge numbers of people. Great, mm-hmm. great mission field. Challenging one from many different standpoints, from the communist government to the ramifications that has not even on technology. I think there are some definite challenges there. So blessings on John's work. Thank you, John, for joining us. Up next is our new technology showcase. This is a fairly new feature to the Wells Tech podcast, where we take a look at some new shiny tools in the news and maybe their potential use for our listeners and their ministries. What are we looking at? What's coming across the wires this week?
Well, a lot of the talk this week was about a couple of new iPhone applications, mobile applications, one from Yahoo and one from Skype. The Skype one's going to allow you to do Skype on your iPhone, not just telephone calls, Skype type calls, but also...
Just dropped my iPhone. I was looking at these apps I just installed.
Not a good idea. Okay, but also being able to do the whole messaging system that is set up for you with Skype as well. So
yeah, have you installed both of these, Sally?
I haven't. I don't have the microphone, the iPod Touch.
Right.
You need a special
microphone. Yep.
Absolutely. My husband has one, and he's played with Skype some, but I haven't gone that route yet.
Okay. Yeah, I installed both of them. I installed Skype the first day it was out, which works really well. It works only over Wi-Fi. It does not work over 3G. So if you're trying to save on your AT&T bill by using Skype on your iPhone, that's not going to help you a whole bunch. But I made a couple test calls with it, and it works great. The only knock against it I have at this point is you can't grab a voicemail. And obviously, because it's a single processing platform, the iPhone does not have background processing. You actually have to have Skype open, and the only thing open, to receive a phone call. So it's more outbound use, but it works extremely well. It brings in your whole contact list, and it works essentially like the desktop version of Skype. And I have found with any Skype version that I've used, I have a Mac at home. We use Skype, obviously, for this call. And now, on the iPhone, I really think the call quality of Skype is excellent, probably better than what I'm getting on the cell phone or regular landlines at this point. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I'm definitely using it for my long distance needs here, you know, and I have the cordless Skype phone that I'm using in our home. And so I'm a huge Skype fan. I just need that microphone for it to work with the iPod Touch.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Got to make a trip to the Apple store.
That's right. So what does that mean? The cities or Mankato?
Mall of America.
Mall of America. They would have to have one, of course. The other one that you mentioned, Sally, the Yahoo One Connect, is I think the first, or maybe they're probably not first in the pool here, but a growing industry or segment of apps that are trying to bring together all these social networks. The iPhone's a good platform for that because it's obviously always with you. And I tried it out a little bit. I'm not a big Yahoo user, so I think people that are Yahoo users probably would get more out of this, but it does aggregate a number of social networks. They call it a growing list of social networks. Right now, they do Bebo, mm-hmm. Doppler, which is a travel aggregator, Friendster, Last.fm, MySpace, and YouTube. You can also bring in Facebook and Flickr and Twitter. So they've got a limited group there, but it does basically aggregate all of those feeds. So you could follow different people through this tool or email or instant message with them. They have some instant messenger accounts. I don't use Yahoo Instant Messenger a bunch, but if you do, this would be a great, and if you have an iPhone, probably a great application to try out. So I think we'll see more and more of these coming down the pike as we get so many of these social networks and we just want one interface, one view of everything, and that's kind of
right.
What these are good at. So
I know I start my day, you know, looking at my email, and then I close that, and I look at my Twitter, and then I close that, and I look at my Facebook, and I close that,
uh-huh.
And I look at my RSS feeds, and I close that, you know, so being able to tie all those together is definitely going to be something that's useful to folks.
Yep, absolutely. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, your pick.
I am going to highlight a website called freesound.org. And this one, I'm really bringing it up with students in mind, or teachers and classroom kind of setting in mind. Just in my limited experience over in our computer lab and getting the students engaged, they just love multimedia. They love to do anything video related, and they love to do things with sound. We've did a whole series on Scratch programming. I think I've had Scratch as a pick of the week in the past, which is, it's basically a programming language where the kids can manipulate sprites, they're called, on the screen, and you can add in sound effects to that. And, you know, if I give them a Scratch project, they're going to just have their heads in the sounds. They love playing with sound effects. So Freesound is a Creative Commons site where you can download to your heart's content just multiple sound effects. And certainly it would be useful if you're doing any podcast projects in school. And also the kids, if they're so inclined, can create their own sound effects and upload them to the site. So a way for them to publish and have some things out on the web, which they really enjoy as well. So just a quick plug for freesound.org. I had used other sites in the past, but you're seeing a lot more of the monetization going on where you have to pay for the sound effects that you're looking for on different websites. And
mm-hmm.
This one's completely free with Creative Commons licensing. You can use it, you can mash it up, you can do whatever. You just need to kind of give attributes to where you got the sounds from.
Very good. No reason to pay these days for many things, right?
That's right. Like that price point.
Absolutely. My pick is a website. It's a social network, another social network that fills a specific niche, at least for me it does, called Goodreads.com. Goodreads.com is basically a site where you push in all of the things that you've read, are reading, or want to read. So I think they interface with Amazon and a few of the other vendors to bring in the the jacket of the book and the author and so on and so forth. You have to just do a quick search. I doubt there's very few things that you couldn't find by searching on the book that you're reading or books that you've read by ISBN number, author, title, whatever search term you want to use. And basically the concept here is that other people are also on Goodreads and they share their comments. Basically, you put in a book and you say what you thought about it. You give it a rating and you add a comment about it. And then your friend, you can see what your friends are saying about books that maybe you would be interested in reading by topic or by theme or whatever it is. Unfortunately, right now, Sally, I only have two friends on Goodreads. Basically, it goes into all of your contact lists and finds any of your contacts who are also on Goodreads. And then you obviously, the more friends in here, the more powerful it becomes. So all of our listeners, I'd give you a challenge. Go out to Goodreads. That includes you, Sally, and register an account. Yes, another social network. But this is kind of cool because I think it's really helpful to have other people who have read books and can recommend them rather than just kind of going to Amazon and reading what other people have said, especially with the kind of books that maybe we read on technology and ministry. It's helpful to get somebody who's maybe got a similar approach, and if they've read something or are reading something, really helpful. I'm currently reading list. For instance, right now I'm currently reading The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. Very interesting book, and it says what page you can put in what page you're on. That's a little problem for me because a lot of the reading I do is on Audible, and they're audiobooks. They don't have page numbers, so I have to guess about how far I am through the book. But I really encourage our listeners to go out to goodreads.com, register, and add me to your friends list. And share what you're reading. I would really love to know what you're reading, and I would love to share with you what I'm reading. So kind of a bookshelf-type concept via social network. So goodreads.com.
You know, Martin, I'm just thinking about ministry applications, and I know since my husband's a recent graduate of SIM, that when the guys all kind of dispersed for vicar year, that was one of the things they wanted to stay in contact with each other. What are you reading currently?
Yeah.
And then again, when they graduated, you know, that's one topic that always comes up with his class is, you know, what's on your reading list currently. And so I could see some real good ministry applications for social reading list.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Be good to explore.
Awesome site. There's a bunch of these. This one tends to interface with some of the other social network aggregators like FriendFeed and those kinds of things. So it works really well where it can publish books that you're reading out to Twitter and Facebook and all those kinds of things. So give it a shot.
Very good. Well, I've got a plea for our Wells Tech listeners as well, and that is to get your picks in for our current contest. We are running a top five Desert Island software picks contest. It's going to go through the month of April, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear what five applications you couldn't live without if you were stranded on a desert island.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get us that information via email, on our Facebook page, via Twitter, leave us a voicemail, whatever way you want to communicate it to us. We'd just like to hear your top five picks. And I'm going to tell you, we've got way more listeners than we've heard from so far. We really want to beef up the number of entrants we have into our contest, because so far we haven't heard from very many people, and we want to include your picks in this list and come up with a really useful compiled list of all these software picks. So
that deadline, Sally, is?
It's coming up on Sunday, April 26th at midnight, so make sure you get them in before that evening.
And we have a fabulous prize. And last week I failed as the sound engineer of the Wells Tech podcast. We needed a drum roll, and we had none. But thanks to your pick of the week, Sally, I went to freesound.org and found a beautiful drum roll before we tell our listeners the fabulous prize they could win.
All right.
All right. What are they going to win, Sally?
Well, they're going to win a $25 gift certificate to our Wells Tech store. You can find it at cafepress.com/WellsTech. You can buy all kinds of Wells Tech goodies to show your love for our podcast and spread the word. And $25 will buy you quite a lot in our Wells Tech store. So
that's right.
You definitely want this prize, and we want to hear from you.
Very good. Next segment is the popular community feedback section. Sally, who's talking to us?
We've heard from a lot of our listeners this week. It's really exciting. We heard from Jason Schmidt. He's at Gethsemane Lutheran School in Omaha, Nebraska, and he sent us a link to Embed It. Is it embedit.in, I think, which generates code for embedding text documents and images and videos and all kinds of things like that in your website. So I played around with it a little bit, and it's really slick. You get a really nice embed code that looks good on your website and will display, you know, all different types of media. So if you're looking to embed a document or a particular image or whatever, this is a really easy way to get it done. Mm-hmm. One thing I was kind of surprised by, and I didn't have a lot of experience with when I went there, was they use the OpenID concept of logging into the site. Right. And so they actually were asking me, I think, for my Google right. login. Mm-hmm. And that kind of surprised me, but we talked about that, Martin, and you said you're seeing that more and more across the web.
Absolutely. And the new Wells.net site will take advantage of OpenID, I think, as we move forward. That's going to be launching later this summer. OpenID is basically an open standard and a trust relationship set up between multiple sites. So apparently, embedit.in jumped on, and essentially it trusts users coming from Google in this case, or Yahoo, I think, is part of the OpenID initiative. Basically, it's a concept where it simplifies the login process. So if you can remember your Google ID, you can use that for multiple sites. So it's a single sign-on kind of technology. I think it'll be growing, and I think other sites will be using this as well as we go forward.
Thanks,
Jason, for the stuff. The embedit.in, I think that's useful, especially if you're presenting materials that maybe you can't guarantee that your users will have the player or the tool or the software to open up your document, whether it be a Microsoft Word document or whatever. It can show all those.
Very good. We also heard from Alyssa Dunning, who works in our web services office, and apparently she listens to NPR's Tech Podcast and came across a neat website called Visual CV, where you can create a resume online, and it's very professional looking and totally free to do, so that you get your own web address, visualcv.com/your name, and you can send people there to see your online resume. So in this day and age, when there are a lot of job seekers out there, this may be a good resource to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. There's many of these tools cropping up, and if you are on the job market, it is, I think, almost essential, depending on maybe what industry you're in, to have some kind of web presence, maybe even video, that would help a potential employer get a little bit of sense, get a little better sense for who you are. So this is just a segment of that. This Visual CV, they do a nice job. I was there. I was looking at that site earlier.
Yep, very professional. Next, we had a comment from Ryan Rosenthal, and I really love our Wells Tech community, because last week my pick of the week had to do with saving money by turning computers off at night. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies are realizing a lot of savings in their electrical bills because of just simply shutting down the computers, and I think you commented that there was software out there to do this, and maybe our listeners could send us a link to some, and that's just what Ryan did. He sent us a link to NC Shutdown, which is a Novell software, and he says it's really a small and lightweight solution and shuts down your computer at whatever time you program it to. So we'll include a link to that in our show notes.
Very good.
Yep. And then we had a lot of Twitter conversation. I'm
love the Twitter conversations. Bite-sized 140-character messages for us.
That's right. And you can participate in that Twitter conversation by putting a pound Wells Tech or hashtag Wells Tech on any of your tweets, and it'll come into our feed and we'll be made aware of it. The others following the Wells Tech conversation will know about it as well. We heard from David Savatsky, who works in our Wells World Mission office, and he's looking at Blip TV and finding some interesting things going on with Blip TV. And you know, I didn't check it out real thoroughly. I don't know if you have experience with Blip TV, Martin, but
that's like it's like a YouTube or a Vimeo. It's a growing social video sharing site. I think it's got a lot of traction and really is growing quickly. Good quality.
Mm-hmm. Jason Schmidt sent us a link to Alert Thingy, which is a social desktop. But then over the conversation, of the course of the Twitter conversation, it sounds like it was crashing on him and not bringing in his Facebook correctly and stuff. So maybe they have a little more work to do on that. It's an Adobe Air application. And I just read today about another Air application that does something similar. It's kind of like the Yahoo OneConnect on the iPhone, where you're pulling together all these social networks on your desktop. So more and more development on the desktop as well as the iPhone in that space.
Yep.
Pastor Tim Wagner left a Wells Tech Wells Tech comment in Twitter about a utility for determining RGB values for any color in an image. I think I had a pick a couple of weeks ago, colorschemer.com, and this is another free color picker, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's by Eltima, I believe is how you pronounce that.
Yep.
And Martin, I noticed you were out on Twitter talking about
yes.
in our Wells Tech Wiki. So maybe
based on a lot of questions I get about copyright, I put a couple blog posts up that actually got a lot of traffic the last couple of weeks. A lot of gray areas, and those obviously spawn a lot of questions. And so I had two blog posts that I thought would be worth sharing, so I put them up and tweeted about them, and then ultimately posted them on our WellsTechWiki.wells.net site. Thought that, boy, this would be good conversation to capture for the long term. So we've created a new copyright page on the wiki page. So go out there and take a look at what we've got there and add to it, please. If you have ideas, questions, experience with any copyright issues, the Wells Tech Wiki would be a good place to share that.
And, you know, I was just remembering very, very early on in our podcasting careers, Martin, we had Harvey Dunn on, an attorney who actually specializes in copyright. And so maybe I'll throw a link out on that wiki page.
Absolutely. I didn't think of that. Great idea.
Yeah. So I just find it really valuable to capture that stuff, like you said, to have a place to turn to when we get questions in the future, and also to continue to update it, because it's always changing. The landscape is always changing. So
that's right.
Good stuff. And my contribution to the Twitter space was a Lifehacker post that I thought was really cool. Build an under-the-cabinet kitchen PC from an old laptop. So my geek heart came out in this one. This just looked too interesting to me to actually have a laptop mounted under the counter. You know, I've done the CD radio players under the counter. We always want the music going in the kitchen where all the activity is. And boy, having a laptop just looks too appealing. And I actually have an old laptop. Jason Schmidt responded right away and said, oh, go for it and make sure you post pictures of the process. So we are actually going to take up that challenge and do our best to mount a laptop under our kitchen cabinet. So
Very cool. I didn't see that article. I'm very interested.
Yeah, I think it has a lot of potential. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. And then finally we heard from our friend John Shoesmith.
That's right. John's our resident closed captioning expert. Mm-hmm. He's out at Redeemer in Yakima, Washington. He's done some great work and had some really phenomenal results with posting closed caption sermons on Google Video. And John actually sent us a really generous offer. He's been hearing from different congregations questions about using Silverlight, which would be an alternative way to encode your video videos and be able to post them on your own site, because the Google Video site is no longer accepting uploads. And so what John's offering is that if churches are interested in his encoding abilities, they can send him a SAMI caption file and a finished video that matches, and he'll do the encoding for them and send it back to them for upload
to
their own website.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, what a guy. Yeah. So if you're interested in contacting John, you can do that through the Redeemer Yakima website. We'll have a link to that in our show notes, and he would be happy to work with you to do encoding in Microsoft Silverlight for your caption files.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thanks for all the feedback. You can contact us on our website, wellstech.wells.net. You can Twitter #WellsTech or Twitter us directly. Sally is WellsTech Trainer, I believe.
That's right.
And I am M. Spriggs. So meet us in the Twittersphere, or whatever other way you want to contact us. Facebook would be great as well.
Twittersphere.
Well, Twittersphere. I'm sure that's not an original word. That's got to be out there someplace.
All right.
Well, we've done it again, Sally. We're well over an hour. Apologies to all those folks who send us, nobody sends us hate mail, but just a friendly reminder that, boy, it would be nice if this were a little bit shorter so I could listen to it on my commute. But we'll blame it on Dr. John. we always blame the guest when we go over.
He's not here to defend
himself. Right.
Good choice.
Or all of our feedback. It couldn't be us talking and blathering on and on about D's and W's, but whatever. Up next week, we are going to continue our conversation of Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. And kind of an interesting topic this coming week, we're going to talk about the personal motivation meeting collaborative production. And you can guess what the topic of the conversation will be. It is Wikipedia and the phenomenon of that collaboration to create something special. And the long tail, and how many people just kind of are lurkers out there on Wikipedia and maybe make one entry or two, but there are others who are big time Wikipedians, and they edit their days away. So we'll talk about how that has impact on ministry. And we also get to listen to part one of an interview we had with Mike Wessendorf, one of our Wells artists, one of our musicians. And I think you'll find that very interesting, that conversation about how to get started in the music business if you are an independent, maybe don't have a lot of coin to get that going, don't have a record label. Mike has successfully done that, I think. So we'll look forward to that. Mm-hmm. Let's close our show, Sally, as we always do, with a Wells featured artist. We've got a new one this week. Happy about that. Stephen Bautista is a Wells musician, and his album is named Abandon. And in keeping with the Lenten theme, his song, The Man Who Drove the Nail. Beautifully done, beautiful album. You can find out more about Stephen from his website, StephenBautistaMusic.com. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and to my gravelly voice, and at least you got to listen to the sweet tones of the southern drawl of Sally Draper. Thanks for that, Sally, as always. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week. If I were there, standing by Jesus' side, would I be bold enough go against the bitter tide? Would I speak out, willingly plead his case, defend him to the end from the angry crowds he faced? And would I run to his rescue? Would I come to save the day? Would I run? And the man who drove the nail.
standing by Jesus' side, will I be bold enough to go against the bitter tide? Will I speak out, willingly plead his case, defend him to the end from the angry crowds I'll face? The man.